Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Happy almost Friday. Happy almost November. In fact, a lot of you, I suppose if you're awake on your Friday morning, well, good for you. Then it's already your November, but I feel like I got to stay on West Coast time. Otherwise, the show doesn't make much sense. So when I walk in the door, sometimes the security guards will say to me, good morning. It's 12:15 a.m. Eastern time. A lot of times when I walk in and they'll say good morning, because I know many people who work third shift, they sleep up until the point at which they come to work, right? So they will sleep more like what producer Pete does. He sleeps in the afternoon in through the evening. But I've always found that it was better, if I was going to work in sports, to sleep when there are no sports. And so it's better to sleep for me in the morning and in the early afternoon than it is to sleep at night. And honestly, I'm fairly worthless when I get home in the morning. I can sometimes do dishes. I can read a little fiction that helps to settle my brain. I might be able to pack a bag if I'm going somewhere. In fact, that happens often when I'm going somewhere. I end up packing my bag at the last second. But I don't have the brain function really to do a whole lot more in the morning after a show. I'm pretty mentally worn out and hungry. So I usually eat, play Wordle, and then go to bed. So I'm not good at staying up in the morning, but a lot of people, I know it's maybe personal preference. A lot of people, they'll stay up after they work an overnight shift. I had a neighbor not that far away from me a few years ago who he would come home from his overnight shift and at 7 a.m. would start using his edger and his leaf blower and doing yard work at 7 a.m. because he was awake and it felt like it was his, I don't know, his late afternoon. But not for me, because I've been up since, well, with the construction going on in our backyard, it feels like I've been up a lot longer these days. But since I've been up for now almost 12 hours, this is my nighttime, not my morning. So I'm still in Halloween and October mode, but I'm ready to put it in the rearview mirror, that's for sure. I also really wish I could hear out of the other one of my headphones. Gosh, this drives me crazy. All right, maybe I'll just not use headphones. No, can't do that either. It's not fixed. Pete told me it was fixed. I think it was fixed for about 3 days, and now it's not fixed. But you know what? It's a studio host problem, not yours. I can still hear you, though. 855-212-4227. You can find me online at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. I haven't had the chance to put up our Game of the Week poll on Facebook yet, but I will. What I do have for you there is a brand new short video that we recorded yesterday morning. So as Pete and I were getting off the air, we were deciding that we needed to do something in honor of this end of October and Halloween and all that jazz. Also, that voting thing that's coming up. That's what one of my fifth graders called it on Sunday at church, that voting thing. I asked them what they were excited about. They all knew Halloween. And then one little boy tentatively puts his hand in the air. And that voting thing. Yes, that's it. It's coming up. So in honor of that, all of those things, we did a quick video. We wanted something new, some new material on YouTube just to reintroduce the channel. It was one of our goals for the month of October. So we got it in just under the wire. And we're in this little studio where the phone can pick up both of us in terms of audio. Now, it's closer to Pete. In fact, Pete's not here. But when you start watching the video, all of a sudden, Pete's head is right in your face. So the phone is zoomed in on him because he wanted to zoom in on me a little bit as opposed to a wide angle shot. And so when he starts with himself saying hello and introducing the video, it's essentially his head fills the entire camera. And it, let's be fair, it does look a little bit like a pumpkin. So Ryan, tell me I'm wrong. It does look a little bit like a pumpkin.
You're not wrong.
and Pete will make fun of it himself, too. He chooses to have a pumpkin head. And so that's how the video starts. If you're looking for me, I swear I'm in there. But it begins with your introduction to producer Pete's head and face. It's right there in all of its glory. So that's how we started. We did that earlier this week and wanted to share it with you. And Pete took off Thursday so that he could go. Actually, Pete and Marco took off Thursday so they could go trick-or-treating with their kiddos. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Man, it's been quite a week from a brand new video to a dog here in studio. I did talk to Michael, and he told me that Mello, our puppy, our canine guest who was here for the hump show, was reunited with her panther. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, well, you can check that out on our podcast. But yes, she has a favorite stuffed animal, favorite stuffed toy, and panther was too big for them to bring on the plane to New York. And so she had to wait till she got home for panther. Also, Mike said they barely made it to the airplane. So he left Yankee Stadium at 3:39 New York time. He had to go back to the hotel, get his stuff. No doubt he smelled like champagne and other alcohol because he had been in the Dodgers clubhouse. So he said he took a quick 5-minute shower, grabbed his stuff, stuffed it in a bag, got his dog, and then had to get to the airport. And he said they barely made it. So they were already boarding as he was getting to the gate. Could you imagine after all that, you're covering the Dodgers clubhouse and then you miss your flight back to LA? That would stink.
It's also a celebration in a weird way.
True. He is not only does he cover the Dodgers for NBC LA, but he's also grew up in LA, so is a longtime Dodgers fan. But I think he really wanted to get home. He'd been in New York since Sunday and was anxious to get back home, and Mello needed her panther. So they got home in time. They made it home safely. They were both exhausted. He didn't sleep. And he sent me a picture of Mello underneath the seat in front of them. So she kind of slips underneath the airplane seat in front of them. And so she was good. She was ready to go home as well and be reunited with Panther. Now, in honor of the baseball World Series, I got a couple of things to pass along. Now that the dust is settling, you may or may not have heard that the average time of the games was up. But I feel like you could figure that out if you were watching these games, especially the final game 5 in New York on Wednesday night, because there were 16 walks. The Dodgers used a bullpen start. It wasn't supposed to be that. Well, actually, it wasn't a bullpen start. It turned into a bullpen game after Jack Flaherty was gone in the second inning. And they had 7 pitchers. No team winning a clincher in the World Series has ever used that many pitchers before. And so the average for the World Series, it ballooned from, I guess, in this pitch clock era, from all the regulations and the new strategies that Rob Manfred has used to try to quicken the pace of play and shorten the time of games. It was up 18 minutes from last fall. So it went from 3 minutes and 1 second, the average time of a game in 2023, to 3 hours. I say 3 minutes. This is what happens to me when I'm got too much in my brain. I need a break. 3 hours and 1 minute in 2023. Again, there goes the perfect show. To 3 hours and 19 minutes this year. And that's with the pitch clock. Though I'm not sure if you saw it much in the World Series. I looked for it and really didn't see it much in the World Series. It didn't seem like they were focused on that. So yeah, they had gone from 338 in 2021, which was the last time before they brought in kind of that electric pitch calling device to help the pitchers and catchers communicate so that they could get those signs in more quickly. It went to 324, so it was down 14 minutes the following year. Then it was down another 23 minutes in 2023, but this year was up. And you can blame the Dodgers for that because of all their pitching changes and the fact that they really were trying to piece it together inning by inning. Yeah, mid-inning pitching changes increased by about a change and a half is roughly the number. So you had better than five mid-inning pitching changes this year during the playoffs. So a lot of what the Dodgers were doing, employing in those bullpen starts, it wasn't just the Dodgers, but they were the last team standing, that really extended the length of the games and slowed down the pace of play. It did not affect those of you who are watching on TV. Not even a little bit. In fact, the Dodgers win over the Yankees in Game 5 averaged better than 18.5 million viewers on Fox, Fox Deportes, and streaming. So it's all three of the outlets. Most watched game in the Fall Classic since 2019 when it was the Nationals who were closing out the Astros. So that's a nice bump. First time in 5 years that they've seen that many viewers. And the series itself was nearly 16 million viewers on average. So across all of the games, 16 million viewers on average, which is the best since it was Houston and LA. And that was one hell of a series going back to 2017. Oh my goodness, the number of twists and turns. Last year was a record low in viewership. Not as many people interested in Rangers and Diamondbacks, even though the Rangers had never won a World Series. And so it not the average wasn't double, but Game 5 was double what the average was a year ago. So a lot of people tuning in. Of course, there were just some weird moments. Yankees fans trying to maul Mookie Betts and grab his glove and holding onto his wrist. And as it turns out, there were some other poor experiences, too, that were transcribed. And I don't know if it's because Yankees fans were so angry over what happened in the fifth inning, but I suppose after watching their team implode and after watching Gerrit Cole struggle to get out of that fifth inning and nearly getting the third out without giving up any runs, only to see it all come apart and all go horribly wrong. I don't know. I feel like there were a lot of cranky fans there. It really was an inning that baseball fans will never forget.
And it's lined to center field, charging Judge. He dropped the ball and throws to second. Too late. So that'd be an error on Judge. That's the first time I've seen him drop a ball. So it's an E8. And the pitch is hit on the ground to short. Volpe throws to third, and it's bobbled. So everybody is safe. Volpe's idea was good, but it was a very tough throw because the runner was going across from him. So that would be another error, I would think. A ground ball weakly hit to first. Rizzo has to go himself, and Betts beats it out. Cole forgot to cover him. So the Dodgers score on a weak little ground ball to first.
Cole out of the stretch. The pitch. Hernandez, fly ball, left center field. Judge going back, chasing after it. He's not going to get there. And one hops off the wall. Mookie scores. Here comes Freddie. Teoscar Hernandez has tied Game 5. Two-run double from Teo. 5-5 in Game 5.
What a fifth inning it was. Turning point of game five for sure, and the springboard the Dodgers needed to be able to win in that fifth game and not have to go back to L.A. without the trophy. Now, obviously, the Yankees took the lead later in that game, but once the Dodgers had been unleashed, they'd been held at bay in that fifth inning. But two errors, a big mental mistake. They nearly got out of a bases loaded, nobody out jam, only to see Freddie Freeman and Teoscar Hernandez come up with run scoring hits. The calls on the Dodgers radio network with Steven Nelson and, of course, John Sterling on Yankees radio. And that really changed everything. Now, is it why the Yankees lost the series? No, it's why they lost game number five. But the attitudes, the body language, just the facial expressions, and of course the emotions of the Yankees afterwards, you know how hard they're going to wear it. As for the Dodgers, they got home on Thursday, and it was Walker Buehler who stepped out of the plane first, holding the trophy aloft. And so we're going to get to see them in a parade on Friday. I mentioned this. It kind of blew me away when I saw it. But Friday is Fernando Valenzuela's birthday. He would have been 64 years old from the category of you can't make this stuff up. And we also find out more about the great Freddie Freeman. This is crazy. Freddie Freeman not only played the World Series with a gimpy ankle and hit a walk-off grand slam and three more home runs in the series, 12 RBI total in the Fall Classic, but did you know that he was playing with torn rib cartilage as well? This is how you know you're getting old. Freddie was taking BP, he was swinging during a simulated game to try to get ready with his ankle, and he felt a twinge in his rib cage. But he decided, and this is a story that's out there now with Jeff Passan on ESPN, he decided he would ignore it. He decided he was not going to tell anyone. He wasn't going to acknowledge that there was any more pain. And so he just went ahead and declared himself ready to go. He did a news conference, actually, right after, I think it was right after they won the NLCS, and he did a news conference in which he said, I'm good to go. I'm going to play despite the ankle injury. And yeah, he was taking swings and trying to get ready for his at-bats in the World Series, knowing that his time in the playoffs had been spotty, and he kind of feels this twinge in his side. And apparently, as Jeff Passan goes on to tell the story, he kept swinging. He decided he didn't care. He was going to keep doing BP. And he took like another dozen more swings. And this is what the story says. He felt a jolt through his body and crumpled to the ground. That's from the Jeff Passan story on ESPN. He actually had to have help to get to the X-ray room because he couldn't get there on his own, right? And while they did the test, the results were inconclusive. The Dodgers wanted him to go elsewhere to get an MRI to see what was happening because the X-ray didn't show what was going on and why he was in so much pain. Again, this is after he's decided he's good to go. He tells the world his ankle's fine. He's going to play through it. So he goes to get an MRI, and before midnight that night, the results show up. He has broken the costal cartilage in his sixth rib. And I've never had any torn cartilage or broken rib or anything like that, but these types of injuries can sideline players for weeks. Apparently this particular injury can sideline players for months. So he was not only out there on a gimpy ankle, though he did leg out a triple in the opener of the World Series, but he was also walking hurt and breathing in pain. Breathing hurt. Who needs to breathe anyway? Breathing hurt. Swinging a bat. Can you imagine how that felt after he found out he had torn rib cartilage? So his dad, and again, I want to credit Jeff Passan. This is a great story that I enjoyed reading. It's kind of jaw-dropping. His dad told him to stop playing. He said, it's not worth it. I'm reading the quote. I know you love baseball. I love baseball, but it's not worth what you're going through. And this is the money quote. Freddie looked at him and said, Dad, I'm never going to stop. And then he goes out there and he hits a walk-off grand slam, first one ever in World Series history. he extends his record number of games in the World Series with a home run. He's now got more than any other player, obviously over the course of two different World Series. But he gave us some of the most iconic moments that we've seen in Dodgers lore, including another huge hit for a couple of RBI on Wednesday night. But isn't that crazy? He couldn't even stand up. He goes from not being able to stand up to breathing in pain, barely being able to swing, to being a World Series MVP.
And he also, didn't he also say something like, if I don't miss the ball, I'm fine? It's like, how can you say that?
If I just make contact, I'm good.
Yeah, he's like, I feel fine if I make contact.
Ouch. Never criticize baseball players for being soft, because that is not Freddie Freeman. And Jeff Passan's column is worth reading. It's actually free on ESPN, so it's not, it's usually behind a paywall, but in this case, it's not part of ESPN Insider. You can go ahead and you can read it, and I encourage you to do that, because you'll get to know more about the heart of Freddie Freeman, how much he loves baseball, how badly he wanted to play, and that he was not going to let anything stand in his way. And for that, he is a World Series MVP. But what validation after everything he put himself through and everything his family went through in 2024. The medical treatments that had to save his son's life. Maximus was with them in New York. And, of course, being away from the team because of injuries, freak injuries. Although, like I said, I feel like it's a testament to you getting old when you swing a bat and you tear rib cartilage. I once went golfing with a friend of mine when I worked at my previous network. He's a little bit older. I mean, not old, but just a little bit older. Not real athletic. And we were on the 18th green, and he hopped over the line that my putt was going to take and felt a twinge in his calf. He had sprained a calf muscle just hopping over my line on the green. And so we agreed between the two of us, there was nobody else out there, we agreed that we would pretend like he had been running from a bear who came out of the woods, because that was a much better story than saying, I hopped over a line on the green and that's how I sprained my calf muscle. Yeah, Freddie Freeman should act like, I don't know, he stretched out making a play of some sort, and it was just this incredible play. Or maybe say, I did it on the walk-off grand slam, and that way it becomes a lot more heroic.
I got punched in the ribs
by some unruly Yankees fans. Speaking of that, that's one of the reasons why I was talking about the mood and the attitude. I don't know if you guys know who Wendell Pierce is. I'm a huge fan of his work. He's an actor. He was one of the key actors in a terrific role in Jack Ryan, which was the John Krasinski series that was on Amazon Prime. I loved it. I've seen it like 3-4 times, all 4 seasons. Anyway, Wendell Pierce, he's a Yankees fan. And he went to Game 5 at Yankee Stadium with a Yankees hat on. Oh, he's also in suits, if you know that series. Apparently, he left early, and he put a series of posts up on social saying that the reason he left early is because unruly and obnoxious fans at Yankee Stadium were throwing things at him. This is what I mean. They were cranky. They were angry. More than likely, many of them were drunk, and they were ticked off and taking it out on other people. So he said he left Yankee Stadium because he was talking to a Dodgers fan, and people were throwing things at him.
I'm not surprised. Yankee Stadium is a very bad place.
He called it the worst experience ever. He said the game and experience is of no significance now. The spirit of sports ends with the ugliness of humanity. And he didn't say like which fans they were, if they were Yankees fans or if they were Dodgers fans. But either way, he said that he left because he was getting stuff thrown at him, and it was unruly and it was obnoxious, and it completely ruined the experience for him, which I kind of hate. That sucks. He was sitting in the stands like normal peeps do, and his experience was so bad that he left early. I mean, I guess you could say that that's pretty standard considering what happened with the whole Mookie Betts situation in Game 4. But yeah, I hate that. It's kind of crappy. It's a little bit like Texas fans throwing crap all over the field because they don't like a call. It's just not a good look. And it, well, or Cleveland Browns fans getting called out by Myles Garrett because they're cheering when Deshaun Watson gets hurt. Just, I know alcohol has a lot to do with it in many cases, but it's just, it's ugly. It gets so ugly. Death threats for athletes because your fantasy football team lost. I mean, that kind of stuff is just, it's just crappy. It's shady, and it's a reminder of how out of control sports fans can get. Yes, when there's money involved. Yes, when there's alcohol involved. But some fans just lose perspective. It's a freaking game. It's entertainment. It just, yeah, it's over the top sometimes. I can understand why it would ruin the experience for him. All right, running a little bit late, we're going to get to our Game of the Week poll and kind of run through the options we've given you back half of the hour. I know many of you probably missed my conversation with Jerry Palm as we get ready for the college football playoff rankings with a bracket of 12. We had him on the show last night, but it was in the middle of all the baseball. So I wanted to bring back part of that, just a bit of that conversation so you can hear it and be ready, those of you who are big-time football fans, as we head into what is week 10 in college football. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Here on After Hours, we like you as much as you like us.
Hey, what's going on? I love the show. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, enjoying your show, Amy. I'm normally not up to hear you, but you got a hell of a show.
Thank you.
Hi, Amy. I remember talking with you when you very first started on CBS. You're such a superstar.
Amy, thank you for taking my call. First time calling. Listen to your show every morning as I travel into Boston.
First time caller in any sports show ever, so you are kind of taking my sports show virginity right now.
Okay, but well, that's not creepy at all.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Looking ahead to the brand new college football playoff rankings, the first bracket of 12 will be released on Election Day, actually, coming up on Tuesday. So if you're wondering, if you've got questions, well, so did I. We talked to Jerry Palm in the middle of last night's show, but want to bring that back because that was really more focused on the World Series, and maybe it got buried. We'll do that following the update. But did you know that Josh Allen also went to the World Series while he was in the midst of prep for Bills Dolphins?
The game was awesome. Yeah. Quarterbacks, we went as a quarterback group. Mike White's a big Yankees fan, so... And I wanted to treat the boys to something nice. They've been helping me out in the quarterback room all year, so it's something we talked about and pulled the trigger on and decided to take a quick trip there and made it back in time for meetings, so it was good.
That sounds like fun, a fun excursion, whether it's guys or gals, and always good bragging or, I guess, yapping, depending upon what side you're on. So the Bills get a little bit of fun. The Bills quarterback room gets some fun, even as they're preparing for a divisional battle against the Miami Dolphins. And, yeah, this is a series that has typically gone the way of Josh Allen and the Bills since he's been there. He really excels against Miami.
Just trying to, you know, put extra emphasis on winning games in our division. You know, and make no mistake about it, they're a really good football team. Obviously getting their quarterback to a back helps, especially on their offensive side of the ball, but they got some real playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. And I think I know their record doesn't indicate it, but they're playing really good football right now.
I don't love the term trap game. I know it wouldn't exist if it wasn't actually a thing for some teams, but I feel like Josh and some of the leaders on the Bills staff, not to mention the coaches, that they're too smart, savvy for this. But the Bills, yeah, there are now, there very few teams have been in the position that they're in, which is to hold a four or more win advantage, meaning they've got a four game lead or more. So thinking about four is the baseline. Very few teams have ever been this far up in the division through 8 weeks, and that's where the Bills are. There are only a handful of teams that have ever had this kind of a lead, a four-game lead in their division. But you don't want to let the other teams off the mat, so to speak. And yes, Tua's back, but the Bills' defense is playing better. They've got to get some pressure on Tua, because if you allow him a pocket that's comfortable where he can bake a – a cheesecake or a pumpkin pie. Well, that's bad. So Greg Rousseau and the other rushers for the Bills have got to get in his face, at least to force him to move more quickly than he wants to. And I do like what the Bills defense has done, even in this year in which they've been rebuilt. But Josh is great. They are in a nice rhythm right now as an offense coming off that game against Seattle, and they're perfect at home, which is where this game will take place. So I don't know if you consider this to be one of the games of the week, one of the options, but I think it's important because the Bills are one of the best teams in the NFL, certainly in the AFC, and because they're facing a divisional rival that's got its quarterback on the field again. It's not one of the options we gave you. So you have to check out the poll at Amy After Hours. I'm going to put it up on Facebook during the update. I dare say this could be a total landslide, but there are some other critical matchups out there in week number 9. So at least hear us out. At least check it out. But some college football is straight ahead. 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio. Check out our brand new video. First one with producer Pete on our YouTube channel. Here's our latest sports update.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Tuesday, November 5th is not just Election Day. It's also the first day that we get to see the brand new college football rankings. No longer a playoff of 4, now a playoff of 12. And as we get closer, I wanted to talk to our friend Jerry Palm, who's an insider and understands how the committee will make its decisions. He always puts his projections out on CBSSports.com. He's got a great new column that kind of describes what the changes are and what you need to know. So we had him on the show from Indiana in the middle of all of our World Series Game 5 coverage. So I'm bringing back part of that as we head into another college football weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I started out by asking Jerry who his top four is right now.
The top four teams I have, I'm sorry, you're talking about this week's rankings.
The playoff, playoff rankings.
As opposed to the projected rankings. So I have Oregon, Georgia, I should have looked. I'm always thinking ahead with rankings.
So the first set of rankings.
I have Oregon and Georgia 1 and 2, and Ohio State and Penn State, or Penn State 3, Ohio State 4.
So in a bracket, though, because those teams come from, well, because you've got a couple of teams from the same conference, it would look different, right?
The Big Ten.
Yeah.
So yeah, in a bracket, Penn State and Ohio State would not be. They would not get byes. The highest rated team I have from the Big 12 is Iowa State. So that's a team that would get a bye as opposed to Ohio State or Penn State. And then Miami is the highest rated team in the ACC, so they would also get a bye.
In addition to conference championships, and we talked about strength of schedule, what are the other criteria that the committee is looking at?
Well, head-to-head matters.
Good.
And, you know, they look at how you perform against these teams. So I don't want to say margin of victory is a metric that they look at, but, you know, how you play, this is a committee that rewards dominance and has always done that. So that could work for Indiana. Like, their schedule may not be great, but they're laying waste to it. So, you know, that's something that, you know, you look like a playoff team when you're beating the snot out of everybody you play. So you know, even if that's not a great schedule. It's dominance, it's strength of schedule, head-to-head can be a factor, but it's not everything. It's certainly we have seen in times where that has come into play and has been a tiebreaker, if you will. So, there's a lot that they look at. They have a ton of data. They'll look at things like game control. How well do you take control of an entire game? You know, are you having to win late, or are you getting on them from the jump and just methodically beating them along the way and never letting a team in it? Those are things that they'll look at. I'm not a big fan of that, but that's one of the things that they look at is game control.
Jerry Palm is with us talking the college football playoff and the new rankings, new look rankings come out next week on Election Day. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. How would you describe the competition in college football so far this year?
I think it's been really good. We're going to have, because of these bigger conferences and, you know, the disparate schedules that we've talked about, we could have a bunch of 10-2 teams this year, and they can't all make the college football playoff. So we're probably going to have 3 or 4, you know, 10-win teams left out of the college football playoff. But that's because, you know, as these conferences get bigger and you've got these weird schedules, and of course non-conference schedules matter too, you're just going to have a lot of teams that have been able to pile up a high number of wins, and you just there won't be room for everybody. So that's going to be interesting. There's going to be some pretty good teams still left out of this playoff, which is why I talk about a team, you know, like Indiana at 11-1, and there are certainly some 10-2 teams that have lesser schedules than other teams, even within their own league, that are going to look on the selection day and go, how did we not get in with, you know, 11-1 or 10-2? You know, that they can't take everybody. They won't be able to take everybody even then.
What is Alabama's path to the playoff, considering the Tide are on the outside right now?
Yeah, they have to win out because they're already with 2 losses. And if they get to 3, you know, 9-3 is not going to make the college football playoff this year unless things really go sideways this last month. You know, they're off this week. They're playing at LSU next week. They also have 2 losses, so that's basically an elimination game by Alabama and LSU. LSU, of course, that's an easy place to play on the road, you know, especially at night. It'll be a cakewalk for Alabama.
They call it Death Valley for a reason.
Yeah, the place is nuts. That ends up being an elimination game for Alabama and LSU, and, you know, that's you wouldn't have thought that this late in the season. Maybe for LSU you might have, that they'd have 2 losses. Alabama, of course, lost to Vanderbilt, and that's a real head-scratcher. Even though, you know, Vanderbilt's 5-3 and having a good year, that's still a loss that if they don't make the college football playoff, that Alabama fans are going to point to as the reason why.
I will not try another true or false because my brain is clearly fried from October. However, the impact of an expanded playoff on the regular season, has it lessened what these games mean on a week-to-week basis? Because, we have a fallback. We've lost one game only, so we're still likely to get into the playoff. Or do you think it heightens the week-to-week?
I think it's heightened it because more teams, you have to pay attention to more teams as possible playoff teams. So, yeah, you take a loss, you still got a shot. But more teams are in play every week for a college playoff spot. Whereas now entering November, under the old system, you'd be looking at, there's maybe 7 teams that have a chance to make the playoff. Well, now we need 12. So
we need 12.
The number of teams that have a chance to make the playoff entering November is going to be closer to 20, you know, a realistic chance to make the playoff. So I think it's more games matter in terms of a college football playoff as the season goes on, and I think that generates more excitement.
You really think there could be 20 still alive by the time we get to, as you mentioned, the inauguration days when the championships, by the time we get to early December, you still think there could be that many alive?
No, no, no. No, I think it's like 20 now.
20 now. You know, okay,
but,
gotcha.
Yeah, but in the past it would have been more like 7.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, no, they'll be 12 alive when we get to December when they tell us. And they'll be, you know, 14, 15. It'll be pretty obvious who the bubble is, and it'll be probably relatively thin.
Gotcha. So when you're looking at the, you know, some of the conference champions, obviously we talked about how there's a premium placed on those teams, especially with the power conferences. Well, what about a team like a Notre Dame? How much more does Notre Dame have to accomplish in order to be included?
Well, so Notre Dame's problem, not being in a conference, is they can't automatically qualify.
Gotcha.
So, you know, they've won their season opener at Texas A&M, a game that looks, you know, really good right now. But their schedule is such that might be the only ranked team they play. And that's not good.
Wow.
So, you know, Florida State was on their schedule, disappointed. Louisville's on their schedule, may end up in the rankings eventually, but probably not. They're not horrible, but they may not be top 25 quite. And USC is kind of falling back a little bit. And for USC to end up in the rankings, they probably have to beat Notre Dame, so that doesn't help them any. So, you know, they could be another team similar to Indiana in the sense that, you know, they don't have a win over – well, they have that win over A&M, but they made up for it by losing to Northern Illinois, who looks like a middle-of-the-MAC team. So, yeah, they're going to be tough to judge. You know, and their schedule just doesn't help them. And you know, they're in charge of their schedule more or less, but you know, they've got 5 ACC games that are assigned to them. They've got 3 permanent rivals that they've, you know, chosen with those teams. And so there's not that much flexibility in the schedule, but that's really their own doing.
That's true about Notre Dame, right? Because they've chosen to stay independent. They don't want to share the money, the revenue that comes from TV. They want to be able to set their own schedules in many cases. But at times, it can be a detriment. Although in a 12-team playoff, you would think Notre Dame would have a much better chance, right? Again, because of the same reasons that many other conferences are looking at. The true and false that I, true or false, that I botched with Jerry that we didn't let you hear, although it's in the podcast if you really need a laugh. I was trying to make a statement and said it turned into a question, so it wasn't really a true or false. But my question, the premise was really about whether or not this bracket, this college football playoff of 12, opens up the playoffs for more teams outside of these power conferences, and specifically outside of the SEC and the Big Ten, because those are the two bloated conferences right now. And his answer was no. There'll be one group of 5 school that gets in, and then you'll have a couple of the conference champions, right? Because that's part of the equation now. You've got all 4 conference champions that are allowed in. But he actually believes, and again, you'll have to go back and hear his reasoning for this, that the SEC and the Big Ten could have 7, if not more, of the spots in this college football playoff. And so, yes, you'll get more of those power conference schools involved. And he went on to say that the majority of the spots in the new playoff will be taken up by power conference schools. It's going to be rare that you end up, other than the group of 5 winner, that you end up having multiple mid-majors, so to speak, multiple non-power conference football teams. And so it really doesn't open things up for the little guy, if you will. It doesn't open things up for more schools who, like March Madness, for instance, who have this dream of getting on the stage with these massive athletic departments that are worth billions and billions of dollars, and somehow showing them that you don't need to spend all that money. You don't have to pay quarterbacks $8 to $9 million, sometimes even more. That's the going rate right now in college football, which is crazy. That the little guy can compete, too, if you just give us a chance. Like Central Florida, UCF, right, a few years ago. No, it isn't going to work that way, except for the one group of 5 team. So check that out on our podcast with Jerry Palm. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.